When you hear the word entourage, what do you think of? Velvet ropes, VIP treatment, bottle service, free clothes and sneakers? Well, all of that is accurate.
Those things of like not waiting in line in a club, comp bottles, perks of everything, because the access you're not going to get.
That is Trayvon Edwards, aka Trey, who before becoming an NBA analyst here at The Athletic, was in the entourage of two former NBA players, Marcus Williams and Brandon Jennings.
I remember meeting LeBron for the first time, doing a rare club appearance. First of all, he's icing his knees at the club.
But there's more to being in an entourage than just being a plus one. There's a code.
You have to protect the money. If they intoxicated, make sure y'all get an Uber. If you in a place and there's an altercation or some situation, you gotta be the fall guy.
And transitioning out of that life isn't easy. Returning to reality is difficult.
Think about somebody making you feel good and then taking it away. And if you gave somebody that power, that's why people kind of crash hard.
Trey's journey took him from Compton to Milwaukee, into rooms and parties with LeBron James and Drake, living the life of an NBA player without being in the league. His story is our episode today. I'm Jovan Buha from The Athletic, and this is Stargazing. Yo, yo, welcome to Stargazing, a show about the figures and influencers that surround the superstars in NBA culture. I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter at The Athletic, and joining us now is Trayvon Edwards, aka Trey. Trey is a creative multi-hyphenate. He's an NBA analyst for The Athletic and a copywriter for Wieden Kennedy. He also played college basketball and has been in the entourage of not one, but two NBA players. Trey, thank you for being here, man.
Man, thanks for having me.
Let's get into your story. How and when did you fall in love with basketball?
I would have to say I was nine. My dad had just passed away. My grandma sent me to Portland, Oregon, where I had just met my first cousin, Bruce Jones, and his dad was like a local basketball coach too. And they put me in two camps. It was more so just keep me out of trouble. I went to Terrell Brandon's basketball camp and Kenny Carr. And from there, I just was imitating my cousin and I wasn't very good. I knew who Michael Jordan was. So that was the first person that like I had a habit of like sticking my tongue out and biting my tongue and concentrating. But I would like heave deep threes and do layups and slap my hands. But I never took the sport serious. I really wasn't tripping off of it like that. But it was something that was cool. And then when I got like 12, I just was like, yo, this is something I want to do.
That's awesome. I mean, when I think of Hooper, you're one of the first people I think of because I feel like you're someone who's lived it for 25 plus years and has worn, as I said in the intro, multiple hats. But we want to get into your life in NBA entourages and what that was like, and then you transitioning eventually out of that into what you're currently doing. So how did you link with Marcus Williams and Brandon Jennings and then eventually start hanging out with them on you know, a more permanent basis?
Me and Marcus are the same age. I probably wasn't like cool with him at first. He was always like ranked number one in the state and, you know, he's pretty good. And I played on the AAU circuit as well. From there, we never like really crossed paths like that because I was from a different side. I was from Compton. He's from LA. And he also played at Crenshaw. I played at Dominguez and then he went to Oak Hill and then I finished at Compton. But later on down the line, I don't know if you remember the T-Mobile Sidekick. Mm-hmm. We're all on T-Mobile Sidekicks. And I got added to this email chain. Everybody sending emails and things of that nature. We all just kind of just like hit it off right then and there. We all used to joke. Marcus is hilarious. Like, you know what I mean? When you think about that. So I also was one of the funniest dudes too. So like we kind of connected off of that. And I was already hooping. He's at UConn. You know, I was at Texas Southern. So we just kind of kept a friendship from there. During Marcus' junior year, which was kind of like, you know, he's like the number one point guard in the country. I remember him telling me after they lost, UConn lost to George Mason. So I'm about to go pro. So I'm like, dang, that's crazy. Okay, man, I hope it work out. But I'm not thinking like anything of like, yo, we really tight like that, you know? He goes and he works out for the Celtics. He works out for the Rockets, a couple other teams, you know, and he came to hang out with me. So we went and played Madden because at the time he was living in Compton. And from there, we just talking daily, man. Like I'm talking about like every day. So he ends up getting drafted by the New Jersey Nets. And I'm like, yo, bro, you about to back up Jason Kidd. Another one of our friends, Hassan Adams, who's from LA. He got drafted with him along with Josh Boone and Hilton Armstrong. that first year was cool, man. Like, I didn't really get a chance to hang out with him because he was in a season. Whenever they played in the cities that, you know, I was in, I would go to the games. And from there, I would build relationships with his teammates. So, like, at the time, me, Hassan, Antoine Wright, Cliff Robinson was his vet. I got a chance to talk to these dudes. And as a kid, I didn't have enough money to go to NBA games. And now I'm hanging out with the players. I'm doing all this. I'm not really thinking like, oh, I'm personally going to go to the NBA myself. But like one of my actual friends is playing in the league now. And I'm seeing it from a whole different perspective because I'm hanging out with these guys off the court and on the court. Things didn't work out in New Jersey. So Marcus gets traded to the Warriors. I'm with him every day. So then going to like Oakland, I meet Steven Jackson. I meet Anthony Morrow, Al Harrington. I mean, CJ Watson. You can go down the line of all these guys I'm hanging around with. I remember when they drafted Anthony Randolph. You know what I mean? And it was just a whole different things at that time. I remember Marcus is like, oh, I'm not going to go, but you can go with Jack, with Steven Jackson. He takes me to Jamarcus Russell's birthday party. And it's Monte Ellis. It was a bunch of people in there in the Bay. And we're there. And I'm just like, wow, I'm hanging out with Steven Jackson. This is bigger than life. At that time, I'm not living with Marcus, but I'm hanging out with Marcus. We're talking every day. It was very chill. It almost became normal. Like, okay, he plays in the NBA, but so what? He's just a normal person. And nobody else would look at it that way. They're like, yo, your friend's in the NBA. And I'm like, he's just a regular person. He puts his shoes on just like you. And it's kind of hard to translate that one in the outside looking in.
And then how did you link up with Brandon Jennings?
We had a young homie that was in the group chat that had a sidekick at the time. And this happens to be Brandon Jennings. Now, Marcus Williams' dad used to coach Brandon, AAU, and then also, was very instrumental to getting to Oak Hill. And they're like, yo, you remember little Brandon? I'm like, not really. So I'm like, I talked to a couple of people and they was like, oh, he was our ball boy back in the day. I'm like, okay, cool. But I'm still not even really, it's not even resonating to me that like this kid is the number one player in the country. Cause me and Marcus, we kicking it. We like 5-6 years older than him. So we not even really thinking of that. When Brandon's like getting ready to close out, he's like, oh, I'm gonna go to play professional ball in Rome. I'm like, man, that's dope. You know, like, congrats. It's never been done. Just this whole journey. He goes. And at this time, we all had MacBooks. We used to be on iChat, RIP iChat. iChat's not a thing anymore, but we'd be on the sidekicks and all that stuff. And I remember just talking to Brandon every night. Like, Brandon was, it wasn't a success story immediately. You know what I mean? Because European ball is way different than over here. Like, they weren't open arms to him. You know what I mean? Like, you would think the number one player in high school averaging 35 points a game, he's going to go over there and play immediately. His coach wasn't like that. He made him sit. Luckily, he had good vets and he worked out every day. The Warriors would come out there and watch him work out, a couple teams, and he was just sticking with it. But he got a chance to like grow up fast. Fast forward the season, he's entering the draft. He had a great workout against Tyreek. He had a great workout against Johnny Flynn, Steph, you know, but he's still thinking he's going to go to New York. He's like, yo, Black Trey hits me up. And it's like, yo, you want to go to the draft? I'm like, all right. You know what I mean? So I go to New York through that whole process. It was just a great experience. Yeah. Like, you know, like the pre-draft party, you're with the class of 09, except Blake. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's there. I'm getting to see Steph before Steph. You know what I mean? Me and Johnny Flynn are cool. Tariq Evans. And just everybody's just kind of pulling up at that time. So the day of the draft, and I remember like grabbing him on his shoulder. And I'm like, you're going to go to Milwaukee. And it happened. He had never been to Milwaukee, like outside of the All-American game. He never lived there. I had college teammates that lived there that used to always tell me about Wisconsin. So I'm like, hey, man, you good. So he goes through his process of getting there. I'm finishing up my college final season of basketball at Waldorf in Iowa. And he's like, yo, come up to Milwaukee. I'm like, all right. I go to Milwaukee. I'm just like, wow. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's cold, but like, we chilling. Like, I'm working out in a NBA facility at the Cousin Center. We just, you know, we playing one-on-one. This is Christmas Day. And at that time, like, me and Brandon are both like kind of the same, 6'1", 160, 570. So like, I'm a good workout partner. I stayed out there probably like a week. You know, I got a chance to raid the equipment closet and all that stuff. And I'm like, oh man, this is great.
So when you hear the word entourage, I think that the show comes up. But that show, there's kind of a clear delineation of who's in the entourage, who's in the inner circle, who's not. It's a group of four. How are the lines, I guess? Because I'm sure there are maybe some people that are, you know, maybe two or three people that are super close. And then there's like an outside circle of another three to four people. And then, you know, you can maybe keep like Saturn's rings kind of keep going out and out, and you have like 20 people. But how do you kind of know who's, I guess, in the inner circle versus who's not?
I think it's just more so just automatically defined. Like, I always was a funny dude. So like, it wasn't like, oh, you gonna be the some, you know what I mean? Like
the turtle or something. The, right.
Yeah, like, I'm not gonna do all that. So my main thing was just like, I always was like the party guy kind of. But it's weird because I'm not a party guy, but I like to, I'm the clown of the group. You feel me? Like, not owning up to being a clown, but like, I'm constantly joking. I'm down to hang out, like, you know what I mean? Whatever we were going to do. So I think it varies on the style of the personality of the player. You know what I mean? Like, Marcus was more like chill, funny, but like to be in the house, you know, hang out with BJ. We might go shooting. We might play ones. We might go to the club. You know, he might want to get a bar off you eating some flashy shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, but you might have a celebrity guest. You know what I mean? Like, you just don't even know. It just kind of varies.
You just mentioned some of the roles and responsibility. Like, what are some of the day-to-day things that go into being in an entourage?
It just depends. Like, if you don't have a cook, your homie might make some food. Mm-hmm. You might need somebody to get picked up from the airport. You pick somebody up from the airport. They're not going to go to do their own, like, grocery shopping and stuff like that. You, if you living with them, that's kind of like a normal, it's not even like a job, but it's just like, that's common stuff. Like, what you would be doing, you just living in a better crib. It honestly just depends, because it depends on the player and what you're doing. And I think like hanging out with Brandon was more so like, 1 week we hosting Wale, we're hosting Bow Wow, we're hosting Little Twist, versus there's a week where it's just the homies. You know what I mean? So it's just different. Chill. It'd be like, yo, yeah, you just chill with my homie Black Trey, and he make sure you good, because he can't focus on that. He got to focus on the game. He got to focus on a lot of stuff. So it might be like, yo, you trying to hang out with some chicks? I know some chicks locally. You know, call and do all that other stuff. Oh, we gonna go out tonight? All right, let's set up the table. Things like that. You know what I'm saying? So it was always like fun. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like, it's crazy. You know.
Did you ever get starstruck, or because you were already exposed to players, it was just normal for you?
One time, and I never did it again. Brandon had just played against the Utah Jazz. And at that time, Deron Williams is like one of my favorite players. Deron Williams is like 1 year older than me, probably. But at that time, I try to model my game around him. You know what I'm saying? So I was just like, oh, that's just cool. And he had like a crazy weird stretch where he played like Gilbert Arenas right before the gun thing, Tony Parker, Deron Williams, and like, I think Baron Davis at the time. Deron Williams comes up to the car and it's like, yo, what y'all about to do at the game? I didn't know like opposing players, you know, if they got an extra night, they're going to link up with the next player. He's like, yo, we're going to get some sushi. I'm like, yo, we about to go eat with Deron Williams. Like, and he was like, bro, stop acting like a groupie. And it made me so like, did I really come off like that?
Punch.
It was like kind of, all right, cool. And I never did it again. The next week we met Ray Allen, because when he played for the Bucks, one of the guys that was like player personnel that would like deal with the young players, he set it up for Brandon to meet Ray Allen about like professionalism, like how you get ready, you know, things of that nature. Hearing about Ray Allen being vegan back then, that's 2009. Like, that didn't even make sense to me. He's like, I haven't had a burger in 10 years. Never had a burger in like 10 years? How? like, what do you eat? It just wasn't really, but I also wasn't in a position to like ask him a bunch of questions. Cause when you're plus one, you just kind of, you just been a fly on the wall, but just like preparation, he's getting to the arena at like 3:45 PM. Tip off at 7:00. Being the very first person to preparation, that's watching his routines and things of that nature. I'm like, I really want to be excited about this. At this time, you're not even recording stuff like that. So you just like, I'm like, I just met Jesus Shuttlesworth. I just kept saying that to myself, like, I met Jesus Shuttlesworth. It didn't like really think like, this is the beginning of my life of just meeting celebrities, you know? So yeah, that one moment though, just gut check me.
What are some of the biggest perks of being in an NBA entourage?
Oh man.
That you can share.
I mean, being a plus one, because this is the thing, our relationship evolved. I became his best friend. So the treatment was way different. It was like, yo, if you can't reach BJ, you can reach Black Trey. You know what I mean? So those things of like not waiting in a line in a club, you know what I'm saying? Comp bottles. It just depends on a certain situation of how people, but the treatment was that, you know what I'm saying? That's his man. So we gonna look out, make sure you good. They would just always just be like looking out. And I think that was the perks of everything, because like now the access you're not going to get, you know what I mean? Like if you look at it now, entourages are huge. They, you know, this is the stuff LeBron was even able to do at that time was unheard of. You know what I mean? It was kind of like, all right, cool. I remember meeting LeBron for the first time. They're playing the Bucks and he's doing a rare club appearance. You know what I'm saying? And I don't even know if he, I mean, I won't discuss the amount that he made just to even show up, but just to even see LeBron, first of all, he's icing his knees in the club.
At the club. Wow.
He's not drinking, but I'm sure he picked up a crazy bag just to even just show up to the spot. This is 2009. He's icing his knees, like bags of ice, and he's just chilling there. So we're getting ready to go through the velvet rope, VIP velvet rope back then. And the guy's like, take your battery out. This is how you know. I had a BlackBerry and took the battery out of my BlackBerry just to like be around at this time. We go dap up. He's a no play. He's a DMP the next game too, by the way. We dap up. We like, what's good? It's a guy with us. He says, what's up, King? And my stomach just hurt. Cause I'm like, ugh, like, why would you don't even know this man, but you like kind of like, and it reminded me of the situation of Darren Williams. So I'm like, everybody has levels to how they act with certain celebs. You know what I'm saying? So I couldn't really give it that way. LeBron just said, what's up? Called it a day. In the next game, you know, BJ actually had a great game against the Cavs and he earned his respect because he was still, you know, seeing players for the first time. You know what I mean? At that 55, that stuff was crazy.
Night out. It's hard to top a LeBron icing his knees at the club story, but I'm sure you can. So what is like the craziest night out that again, I know some stuff you can't necessarily talk about, but with the stuff that you can share, but what's like the craziest night out?
Lockout season was just like no hose bar because that was all we looked out for. You work out, go hoop, you know, hoop some more. And then we go into the club. We living in LA. Every NBA player is living in LA right now. So like at that particular time, it was hilarious because football players are in the club and it was kind of like a battle between who can spend the most money. And you just like, you're not remembering this stuff. You're not even going to care because it's just bottles flowing. You know what I mean? So that was one time, but like probably like the best time was Drake's pool party. You know, he had an invite. Like, and I'm like, and yeah. It's the infamous picture that's on the internet. I'm like doing some like no look thing, but I'm smoking. But at the time I was a school teacher. So like, no one knew what I looked like. So I was never posting my picture. And I happened to get caught in this picture with Drake. This is the prompt. This is like 2016 where he's like beefing with people. So like every picture is going to go viral in this one. And I'm sitting there and it's a girl that seen us at one of our parties and was like, hey, that's the teacher. You know, Drake? And I'm like, oh my God. You know, because I was trying to do the whole Spider-Man thing. I would teach. And I'm also part of an entourage hanging out as a secret life.
So none of your students knew?
not even some of my family or friends knew. I never really talked about that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, if I came, everybody just knew him as my friend, but like, they didn't know what we were like doing.
You brought up Drake, so let's get into that story. You teased meeting him on Twitter and him knowing who you were. So what's the backstory on that?
Well, it's 2014 or 2015. It's at Auburn Palace.
Palace before. Of Auburn Hills.
It's Auburn Palace. Yeah. And Future and Drake are doing a jungle tour. We're there and we're waiting. And like Drake has his routine with this like personal trainer and everything just to kind of get him ready and hype. And he's getting walking the hall and we have like VIP access. So like before even going to show, we on the side, you know, it's just a different access. Brandon was very close. He's probably still is, but he's very close with Drake's best friend, Nico. So Nico would hang out with us a lot. He would come to LA and hang out with us. He's come to Milwaukee, came to Detroit. So like, we all became friends. But when you go back to Toronto, I'm sure he probably was like, oh, Trey, you know, and it just kind of come up in conversation. So when it came to a point, Brandon's like, yo, by the way, it's my best friend, Black Trey. He like, oh, I know. And I'm like, huh? Like, bro, we've never talked in my like ever. And it was like, it took me back, but it also showed Drake, LeBron. I feel like those dudes have a pulse on everything. KD too, probably. Like that see everything. They might not acknowledge it, but they know who's who, what's being said about them, et cetera. And they can pick and choose when they want to respond to that stuff.
We'll get back to stargazing in a moment. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
Given the privacy that you've mentioned with not letting some of your friends and family know what you were doing, and obviously being a teacher and kind of keeping that, you know, your social life private, do you think you could have done it, you know, go now?
I could have did both. It was, you can easily get sucked into this life. You become thinking that you're that person or you embody that person's success and et cetera. And 2014 was like a very identity time for me, especially. I'm sitting in this luxurious home, but I got 65 cents in my checking account. And it's like, what if this person wakes up this morning and says, I don't want you to be your friend anymore or get out of my house or whatever. Not saying like that was a case and I was like, oh, I got to do something. It was just me overthinking. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to stop hanging out a little bit more. I went back to school, got my second degree. I started teaching. I moved to Arizona. I'd never been to Arizona in my life. Moved to Arizona, start teaching, and was trying to balance the two. Like, if I got a day off, I'll hang out. And if it's the weekend. So I'm less around, and the entourage now changes because I'm not available. But I also was just creating my safety net for your friends not going to be in party mode all day life. Like, having a job, having a responsibility kept me like level headed to not ever get lost. Because I used to be 2012. I remember Instagram first came out. I'm posting pictures, cars, not mine, clothes, jewelry, just trying to create this persona. And I'm just lost, not being true to myself. I had a reality check of like, I don't want to be 30-ish living off somebody. You superly rely on that person. It's almost like a drug. Think about somebody making you feel good and then taking it away. You know what I'm saying? Like, where you feel important and then it's like, nope, you're not important anymore. And if you gave somebody that power, that's why people kind of crash hard.
What was it like for you to have to wait in line to get into clubs and maybe have to pay the cover and just kind of go back to normal stuff that you didn't necessarily have to? I'm sure you had maybe experienced previously in your life, but you know, being in the entourage scene and getting all those perks and all the stuff of basically being treated, it sounded like you were saying, as basically you're the player, right? Or are you getting the same treatment? You know, what was it like to kind of go back to, you know, no, you got to wait in line? And maybe you had connections and stuff, so I'm sure that there were situations.
I mean, sometimes it just really depended where I was. But like, I party so much that I had like I experienced a burnout. Like at 37, you can't pay me to get into, you know what I mean? Like, I went to an NBA player's birthday and I was like, all right, I'm about to leave. What? You about to leave already? Yeah. Like, what is there else for me to see? You know what I mean? Like, in my 20s, I had a great 20 year, you know what I mean? Like, from 20 to 29, it was amazing. I can't compare to none of that stuff. But now, for some people, they like it. I think it's a waste of money at the end of the day. Paying a cover, paying a party, paying to talk over loud music. Like, it's just a lot of things that didn't resonate. I'm not really an outside person, but being a part of an entourage, there's sacrifices. You're not going to let your friends go to the club and by himself in that situation. It might be four of us, but like, I'm from LA. Compton. I'm from Compton. So like, in LA, you're dealing with a lot of street politics. And if a player don't know that, you might have somebody that's trying to rob somebody. You got somebody that don't like them. And I knew all the street guys. So like, my part of the entourage sometimes is just kind of just like being sober and watching this, the overall scene. You know what? Hey, we've been here too long. Let's leave. And we leave. You know what I mean? So that was the main thing. It wasn't like, oh, I'm just having this amazing time and we getting drunk and blah, blah, blah. Nah, it was more so just because I cared about my friend. But we also could just sit on the couch and eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and watch hoop and break down the game. Like, it didn't matter.
You've worn multiple hats since 2014, of being a teacher, now being a copywriter. But the one that's most interesting to me is being a podcaster and an NBA analyst and, you know, full disclosure, you do work for The Athletic. So we are colleagues. But I'm curious, like, what is that like with, you know, knowing players and, you know, you mentioned LeBron is still playing, you know, 2022, still at, you know, the top of the league. And so from knowing players of, you know, being around Marcus and Brandon and, I'm sure having some relationships, what was the transition like for you becoming a podcaster and now being critical of maybe some people that you've partied with or hung out with or have a rapport with, and, you know, kind of almost like a player retiring and now they're on Inside the NBA or something and they're going at people that they have relationships with? Like, what was that? Awkward or tough at all for you, or was it a seamless transition into just, you know, I know who I'm gonna, you know, speak my mind, and if I offend or upset people that I know, it just is what it is.
Yeah, nah, I took a certain approach of how I did it, right? earned a first time because I was media credentialed for the Phoenix Suns. And I see Spencer Dinwiddie and he's looking like, what you doing back here? You know what I mean? Like kind of thrown off because I've been knowing Spencer since he was a rookie in Detroit. When he's like, yo, he looking, he like, you media? Ah, you know what I mean? Like who they crazy. I don't know who gave you the job. You know what I'm saying? But they knew during lockout, I played against all these dudes like on that level, like respectable when I could actually play. I never made it to the NBA, but they respected my game off of that alone and competing in the Drew League and things of that nature. So I had that skin in the game on that. Now, trust. I've been in so many situations where I've heard stories that have I became a vault. I never repeated. So you think now that I'm working for a media outlet that I'm going to break that trust, you're fooled or you don't know me that well, you know? So certain games, I'm going in locker room and a couple people like, oh, you media now? I already had that trust, but I always would tell people like, and to be clear, there's two different sides of how it. There's journalism, which you have to be critical with your pen. You know, like you're going to be covering the Lakers and you're going to say some stuff that players are going to like and they don't. Podcasts, I can be critical, but I can pick and choose how I deliver it and how I would deliver it. And I used to tell players, and I say, look, it's my job. This is what I do. I'm supposed to talk about the game. But I said, I'm never going to say you're not good because every NBA player worked hard and they got there for a reason. I've been a role player. I've been a starter. I look at those situations of being from a player perspective. So I'm never going to kick a player while they're down. But the one thing I'm going to say, if you balling, I'm going to talk about you. If you not balling, I ain't talking about you. You don't get that mention. So it's more on a positive end. Now, if I got to hit on a certain topic and they say, what's my opinion on it? You know, that's why I stopped rooting for the Chicago Bulls. Because I wanted all my opinions to be non-biased. I still see stuff to this day, right? I'm cool with Kevin Durant now. People are like, oh, you afraid to critique KD because that's your friend? Nah, hey, yo, last game. Yo, it looked like you was missing a bunch of shots. You know what? I just checked the box score. You still shot 50%. Or I'd be like, yo, you shooting out there like me, man. You got to get better. I'm critical, but it just depends on how I'm going to fix them players are great. Their bad nights are still good. The same for LeBron. I'm never going to speak down on LeBron's play. I have yet to do that since covering the sport. So it's different. But like Isaiah Thomas, when he was making his comeback and he got picked up by the Wizards, I told him the same thing. I said, you in a position where you trying to rebrand or get a team to kind of believe in you again. I'm not going to talk about your struggles because those words really matter. But in this game, you're not trying to be their friend. I'm still their friend at the end of the day. So I have to be like, oh, he a bum. He need to be out of league. Why he get signed? Nah, because my opinion can affect them. I might say he's not having the best game, but I'm not going to ever say like, oh, he's a bum or this and that, because I know the work that these dudes put in. So and they have a mutual respect for that because I know the game. I'm never going to like talk out the side of my neck on something that I don't know.
Looking back, if there's someone listening to this podcast that wants to follow your career path, be it being in an entourage, you know, maybe they have a friend that is in the AAU circuit or in college basketball right now that might go to the NBA, or someone who wants to do multiple things like you and. You know, kind of change their career path, you know, in multiple ways and do multiple things. Like what is one piece of advice or as many pieces of advice as you want to give, to someone listening right now?
So for the entourage, your friend money is not your money. Make a life of your own because it's going to be an expiration date. You know, you might not look at it. It's inevitable. You know, in a situation of like, oh, nah, we locked in. You might have kids, start a family. You can't live with them. The wife might say no. Come to the table with something. Don't just be hanging around. And probably the last thing for the entourage, protect them. When I say protect the money, protect the person who makes the money. And that's crucial. That means if they intoxicated, make sure y'all get an Uber. Make sure y'all got a driver. If you in a place and there's an altercation or some situation, you got to be the fall guy. I'm not promoting any of no bad stuff, but you have to protect the money.
It comes with it.
It is what it is. You know what I mean? Like, they should never end up in headlines ever, ever. As far as my career trajectory, I can say this is the first of, I can't really create a blueprint for it, but I would say as far as a podcaster, just get comfortable with your craft and get good at it. Continue to record pods. I mean, I didn't even know what a podcast was. My friend Amin, he told me to come on to a podcast. It just happened to be True Hoop on ESPN. And that's how I got into podcasting. I never would have did it. And it took 4 episodes before I was actually like, all right, I'll do this, you know, but outside of that. So whether you have listeners or not, just be consistent, because you can't cheat the grind of podcasting. You know, you can't just say, oh, I'm going to get one big guest, because it don't even matter about your guests. It's more so the relatability of the content. If you could deliver that, you ain't got to be famous or nothing like that.
What is Trey doing in 2025?
Lord willing, I'm a religious man, so I don't, I'm not naive to think that I'm guaranteed to be here, but I would like to be here. In 2025, just hopefully just being ready for whatever the next step is. I mean, I'm almost 2 years into copywriting and I never thought I'd be a copywriter. So I don't know what the next job may be or what I'll be promoted to or whatever I'll be doing. But I can look back and say that, you know, I was able to trailblaze my path and create those situations. So I would just say stay creative and hopefully the things that I create generates, I don't like to say wealth. I mean, a lot of people like to be rich. Obviously we need money, but like I've seen people with money not happy, and I've seen people with little money, you know, happy as hell. So in this situation, it's more so if I'm fortunate, I'm wealthy in life as is, but anything else is a bonus from here on out.
Anything you want to plug? Where can people find you on social?
So my Instagram's super boring, but you can find me at my name at Trevon Edwards. And then on Twitter, which I'm most active on, is at Trevon. And I do podcasts with The Athletic, The Daily Ding, and The Basket Buds. And also, I have a podcast network with a couple friends called Count the Dings, which features over 10 podcasts that, you know, you can pick and choose to find what's your preference.
Thank you for doing this, man. This was long overdue. I'm glad we got to share your story.
Thank you, man.
That does it for this episode of Stargazing. To watch the full-length interview of this episode, go to The Athletic's YouTube page. There's a playlist right there of each episode. To become a subscriber at The Athletic, go to my Twitter account, @YovanBuha, and click on any of my stories. Thanks again for listening.